We've got two cases scheduled for argument this morning in our 9 o'clock sitting, People versus Paz and People versus Ramirez. So counsel for both cases here and checked in?
Yes, Your Honor.
I know we have some experienced counsel here, but let me, before we begin with the arguments, let me just take a minute and review some of our procedures to make sure everybody's comfortable with them. We'll hear argument in the Paz case first, and then we'll hear argument at Ramirez after that. As you know, there'll be 15 minutes of oral argument for each side. We do have a digital timing system, which will show you exactly how much time you have left in your argument. If appellant wants to save some time for rebuttal, you can just close your opening argument whenever you choose, and you'll have the amount of time showing on the digital clock for rebuttal if you want it. We still do have our traditional lighting system. The light will turn green when you start your argument, yellow when you've got 5 minutes left, and red when your time is done. All of the members of the panel have read the briefs. At least one of us has had a chance to go through the record. So for that reason, you might want to go straight to the whatever legal arguments that you have. But of course, how you present your arguments are up to you. There's a toggle switch on the podium, so you can adjust the height as you wish. We'd ask that you stay by the microphone and don't stray from it, because if you do, the microphone won't pick up what you have to say. We now record the arguments digitally. They'll be on the court's website and available to the public within just a couple of days. So if you've got some confidential or sensitive information that you don't want the public to hear, please exercise some discretion in your how you present your argument. Finally, if anybody in the courtroom has a cell phone or a pager, we'd ask that you turn it off now so as not to interrupt counsel in the court during argument. Unless there's any questions, we're ready for argument in People versus Paz.
Always as low as it can get, I guess. Good morning, Kathy Gowdy, 28436, alternate defense counsel for Mr. Paz. This case must be looked at for the specific facts involving the continuance, which was the issue raised in the briefs, the denial of the continuance. It is clear from looking at every single case listed in all three briefs that each case is evaluated on its own circumstances, its own unique set of facts, and there is absolutely no formula, no magic wand to look at in determining it. While it is evaluated for an abuse of discretion, such an abuse of discretion encompasses results that are arbitrary or unfair. And in this case, the judge's decision in forcing this case to trial on October 2nd, 2006, was unfair under the totality of circumstances of this case. When the judge decided or ordered that he was going to have the trial a week after the pretrial conference, which was held on September 22nd, he said, "I find this unpersuaded. This case has been tried once already. We are going to try it. I didn't give you leave to file motions. I'm going to rule on all the motions now and deny them." That was not a reasoned evaluation of the motions, which were constitutional in nature and included a request for a Schreck hearing on an expert who had not been called in the first trial.
Counsel,
yes.
How do you deal, though, with the what seems to be uncontroverted in the record that once you got to trial, the trial judge resolved every single one of those motions, including giving a Schreck hearing?
It goes to the issue of the preparedness of the counsel. Generally, you have these motions in advance, you can prepare for your trial. In this case, trial counsel, who went on the record and stated, "I am competent counsel, but I'm just on it, and I will be ineffective if I go forward with this case without the witnesses and these resolved," then gets them resolved the morning of trial without notice. It's a difference in the preparation, and it goes to the effectiveness.
Well, but what do you do with the fact that some of the motions, the people actually conceded? There were motions in limine, and the people said, "Well, gee, on that particular issue, we don't intend to introduce that kind of evidence." So that motion goes away. What does preparedness have to do with that?
You don't know it's going to happen until the day it happens, and then you go right into voir dire. And that time that you could have been spending on interviewing witnesses, reviewing the transcripts that you had just gotten a week beforehand because prior counsel had not ordered them, all of that. It goes to the amount of physical time a competent counsel can do in preparing for trial, and a trial that has extremely serious consequences to the defendant, as put in the motion for continuance. They should have been addressed in advance. The continuance should have been given. One of the facts that went into the judge's reason is this case has been continued many times. Well, when you go through and look at a timeline on it, very few of those continuances can be attributable in any way to the defendant, and none of them can be attributed to the defendant himself. The first one he's looking at 15 months from the date of charging until the mistrial. Well, certainly the defendant is not responsible for a mistrial. It's generally considered a good thing. You redo the thing. In this case, it had bad consequences because his privately retained counsel withdrew because there were no more funds. As shown in the transcripts, while the client was unwillingly pro se, it's unusual we have one where they're unwillingly pro se. Usually they're saying that they don't want their attorney. He kept explaining how he had gone broke trying to defend in the first trial, how he was trying to get bank loans, how he's trying to remortgage, get family loans. And the judge still said, you can't get the public defender. I'm setting this for a trial date. A trial date gets set while he's pro se. Finally, he goes in and reapplies. The judge says, bring in proof that there is no mortgage, there's no loan you can get. And they appoint the public defender a month before the motions date. The public defender moves to continue the motions at that time, not because he's just been appointed specifically, but because the DA has never given him discovery. So there is no discovery that's been tendered by the DA. Certainly, you have to have discovery to go to trial. The judge granted that motion. They go in, they reset the trial date for about 2 months later. They go in May. And the pretrial conference and the PD says there is still discovery problems here. We have learned that there is a possibility that the parents of the victim, and I'll refer to it only as the victim for purposes of the taping, may have been reported and convicted for making false reports to social services about this child. This had not been disclosed in discovery. Clearly that's Brady. Clearly it's impeachable. And on the day of the jury trial, the judge then hears it again, finds it is a discovery violation. Perhaps it was ineffective assistance of counsel at time to not move to dismiss, but they accepted the continuance as a sanction. That's not a tribute to the defendant, a Brady violation and violation of his constitutional rights. The next continuance is the one that is the one before us. The counsel that found out about the Brady violations leaves the public defender's office. New public defenders are appointed who find out the case has not been worked up. This is not the same as the cases such as Shute that are cited by the people in their brief, where it is the same firm that has represented a private pay person and there's investigation going. It is not the same as the U.S. Supreme Court case in which a public defender became sick 6 days before the trial. The most experienced litigator in the office walks in. The case has been worked. It's been investigated. It's been interviewed. Discoveries received. The motions have been done, and they go in and try it.
How can you say this case has not been worked? Hadn't there been an earlier trial?
There had been an earlier trial.
There had to be some work done, maybe even substantial work done, before that earlier trial.
There was witness interviews. There was a lot of very excellent work because the jury could not find beyond a reasonable doubt that the client was guilty.
As a matter of fact, weren't there a whole series of pretrial motions filed by counsel in connection with the first trial and resolved?
There were, and none of those pretrial motions are the ones that were raised by the counsel who came in August of 2006.
Who filed the nine motions that were at issue in this case?
The public defender that took the case over in August 2006.
So he got those filed.
He did get those filed. And the judge said, I didn't give you leave to file them, and I'm going to deny them.
Was there any reason on the record given why the public defender who was assigned to the case in, I think it was February, didn't file those motions?
No. There's no reason on the record. But
doesn't the filing of the motions indicate that the new counsel was prepared, was familiar with the case, didn't know the issues in the case?
To some extent, yes. But he stated in his motion, he was not prepared to go to trial.
Can I explore that a little bit? Because as I've read what was stated as the grounds related to the need to resolve these 9 motions, I'm not aware that there was any more specificity about, gee, I'm not able to get witness X, or I'm not prepared to do this. It all had to do with the 9 motions. Is that your reading of the rationale for the motion for continuance?
No, the motion to continuance also stated that the public defender investigator had not been sent to interview any of the witnesses since the public defender had the case. Interviewing the witnesses is not just to get discovery, or you could just do it off the police reports. You do it to ask the questions as you, as the counsel who will be trying that case, perceive are important. How are you going to approach this case? Otherwise, when we retry a case after a mistrial, we could just get actors and read the transcripts out. New counsel comes in, and they use their professional evaluation, and that's why new counsel, third round, found that that there were constitutional violations that were not litigated in the first trial, were not litigated by the previous public defender. And one of the interesting issues in it seems to be, the judge said when the man was pro se, he could file more motions in the case that had been litigated and gave leave. But the motions the pro se person filed, who is on the record stating, I don't know anything about the law, I don't know, he just retyped the previous ones that had been litigated. There were not new ones filed on constitutionality, such as suppression, Shrek hearings, questioning of an expert witness that wasn't called in the first time, until the ones that are involved in the current continuance that is before this court.
All of which were resolved on the first day of trial.
To some degree, yes, yes, they were.
And you're not appealing those rulings, are you?
No, those were not raised. It is the arbitrary unfairness of stating, I'm denying them now, so you walk out going, no continuance, get ready for trial. You've got boxes of transcripts to read. You've got to get that out and interview those witnesses. You're not reading cases. You're not doing analysis. You're not preparing as fully as you could if this had been done in a timely manner. And the sole reason he gives is this case has been tried before. There have been many continuances, and I'm not granting another. That is arbitrary. That is not reasoned. And the fact that he did go back and redo those motions, to me, shows he recognized the arbitrariness of his failure to continue it. This case had been on the docket for 2.5 years. By gosh, it was going to get off. That is not how it is done. The client had a right to a due process and a fair trial. And when the counsel comes in and says, I will be ineffective if you give this trial, it's not fair.
Doesn't defendant have a remedy available to him now, a 35C, alleging and establishing ineffective assistance of counsel?
Where the burden is on him. It switches the burden. In the trial, the burden is on the people to prove beyond a reasonable doubt with good cause. In a 35C, the burden then becomes twofold.
The issuance of a continuance, though, isn't there aren't burdens on the issuance or the granting or denying of a continuance. It's an abuse of discretion standard. To the extent that the ruling may have denied this defendant his right to effective assistance of counsel, isn't the remedy through a 35C hearing?
The remedy will have to be, but why not do it right the first time? You know, 35Cs are very difficult. They have a high burden. You know, and I do think it's a shifting of the burden of proof beyond a reasonable doubt, because the judge says, we'll take it up on the appeals. Well, an appeal, I'm coming in with the burden.
Well, what is there on the record before us? I mean, normally we ineffective assistant counsel claims are decided in a 35C proceeding, but when they're raised on appeal, as you've done here, we have nothing more than the record to look at. What is there in the record other than counsel's statement in front of the court that, gee, I'm not prepared? What is there beyond that that shows ineffective assistance counsel specifically?
Specifically, there is that statement. And I needed to put it in, I should have put in a footnote. I need to reserve his right to raise this in a 35C. It should, it is the people's brief that goes into the Strickland analysis. My argument is based on the competent counsel saying, I'm not effective to go forward. That's the sole statement.
Okay, thank you.
That really it is. And ineffective is not, this is not the time for analysis because it was not heard. The record has not been made, and it's a completely different proceeding that I hope this doesn't get to.
So you're not raising ineffective assistance on appeal?
I am raising it only in the context that counsel said he would be ineffective if he went to trial without the continuance.
But the briefs specifically do raise the issue of ineffective assistance. So are you withdrawing that argument as a claim on this appeal?
Yes, I must, because it must be reserved for the client under the facts of this case. I cannot withdraw it from the people's brief, and it's primarily in the people's brief that the Strickland analysis comes in.
But the claim, you'll acknowledge, is raised in defendant's briefs on this appeal.
Yes, and I think it's a nuance here. I'm stating that the attorney fell on his sword and said, you know, I'm experienced, I'm competent, but I'm going to be ineffective. But that's not the same thing as saying he made trial mistakes or all of the other aspects. Should they have sent the investigator? Should they have picked the file? Those are all things that will come into their privacy. There is no record there, and that needs to be reserved for the client should this appeal not succeed. I would reserve my remaining time should I need a rebuttal, unless there's further questions.
Thank you, counsel. You've got about 43 seconds.
May it please the court, Karina Garrity on behalf of the people of Colorado, 34931. The initial motion to continue had two bases. The first was the unpreparedness of counsel to proceed to trial, and the second was the resolution of the new pretrial motions that had been filed. After taking a second look at the record, it's pretty clear to me that the defendant abandoned his September 22nd claim regarding inadequate time to prepare at the October 2nd trial date. Because on that date, when everyone had gathered for trial, counsel expressed no concerns about the lack of preparation. Counsel raised no issues with respect to the trial transcript, which the defense had 20 days to review at that point, and raised no issues with respect to witnesses or interviewing witnesses, calling witnesses. So it's pretty clear that the counsel was able to prepare adequately in the 10 days since the pretrial conference. And the defense renewed the motion to continue only with respect to the resolution of those pretrial motions.
So on the morning of trial, it did renew the motion for continuance, but limited its motion to just those 9 motions?
That's correct. At one point, the court says, and this is the October 2nd transcript at page 12, the court says, "You say you need to continue unless we can hear the motions before trial, correct?" And defense counsel says, "Right." And the defendant received exactly what he requested regarding the pretrial motions. The judge fairly resolved them on their merits prior to trial. The defense was allowed as much time as necessary to make the arguments and to present evidence. Defense counsel expressed satisfaction that each motion had been resolved and, in fact, did not argue that the defense needed more time to prepare the motions, and also did not argue that the defense needed more time to prepare for trial in light of the rulings on the motions. Now, the fact that the pretrial motions were resolved the day of trial rather than in advance could theoretically be an issue in a different case. But here, on October 2nd, defense counsel only requested resolution prior to trial. And defense counsel received that, and opening arguments started 2 days later, on October 4th. And the defense expressed satisfaction that they were resolved and didn't indicate that any more time was necessary in light of those rulings. To the extent that the defendant's claim of lack of preparation was not abandoned, looking at the September 22nd statement of unpreparedness by counsel, I went over the case law again, and it seems that counsel's statement of unpreparedness doesn't seem to be controlling. And I'm thinking specifically of the Ball, Denton, Hampton, and King cases, all of which the counsel said, "I'm not prepared," and yet it was deemed not to be an abuse of discretion. What seems to be more controlling in the cases is what kind of opportunity to prepare did defense counsel have? What could counsel have accomplished in the available time? And that proposition is supported by the Ellis, King, Shute, and Salazar cases. It doesn't necessarily matter that more could have been done. The issue is, was this an abuse of discretion for the court to go forward on a case that had been pending for 2.5 years? It had been reset 3 times since the mistrial. It had been fully prepared for trial 2 times before, once when it went to trial and ended in mistrial, and another time when it was ready to go to trial on June 12th, but the discovery violation occurred and the case was continued again. New counsel had 2 months to prepare and 10 days from the pretrial conference, as well as 20 days to review the transcript. Also not controlling is how long previous counsel had to prepare, because the equation changes as more is done and as the delay lengthens. But it does seem to matter whether the case was already prepared by another attorney. And in the Denton case, the court said 2 weeks is enough for a pro se defendant when he can have the materials from the previous attorney. I think all of these factors are important, but there's also one essential element that's missing, and that is that there needs to be some actual and material prejudice alleged or apparent from the record, and there is none in this case. Thank you. I would ask that this court affirm the judgment of the trial court.
Thank you, counsel.
Thanks.
Ms. Gowdy, if you'd like, you've got about 43 seconds.
43. I can talk fast. In response to the argument that it is acceptable to have motions hearings on the day of trial, the defense attorney did cite on page 198 of volume 1 in the motion to continue the case of Barella that holds that we should not be having motions to suppress or motions hearings on the day of jury trials. The jury trial started the day those was scheduled on those motions. The jury was there. Voir dire started, and it went on for 2.5 days. It was improper to have those motions. It is prejudicial. The case should have been continued if the judge was going to have a motions hearing. Barella is again on page 198. And I tremble at the thought that we may be creating some sort of precedent that all counsel newly appointed are assumed to then have the same perception of a case as prior. Thank you very much, and I apologize for going.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you to both of you for your arguments. The matter will stand submitted, and an opinion will issue in due course.